Thank you so much,
No
Betsy Bird.
problem.
Oh my gosh, Betsy Bird. Thank
Yay.
you so much for meeting with me today. And I was wondering if you could just kind of introduce yourself, a little high level info about what you do, what you're interested in. I know you could go for a while because you
Oh
have
yeah.
seen so many things.
Yes, I'm Betsy Bird. I am the collection development manager of Evanston Public Library, formerly the youth materials specialist of New York Public Library. Let's see. So in addition to being a librarian, I have a blog that I keep on School Library Journal. It's called Diffuse Number 8 Production. I review for Kirkus, sometimes for the New York Times. And I have two podcasts, one that I run with my sister called Fuse 8 and Kate, where we determine if classic picture books should be classics or not. And I host another one called Story Seeds, which I guess is now being sponsored by Macmillan, publisher, where we pair authors and kids together and they write stories together. And that's super fun. And then I write books, yes. I've written two picture books, one book about kids' books for adults. And I've edited an anthology of authors, of funny women for kids, and now I have my first middle grade that I have authored myself coming out.
Well, congratulations. That's
Thank you!
amazing.
Yay!
And this story, Long Road to the Circus, oh my gosh, so cool how you pulled together all these fun and unusual pieces. And it's so kind of realistic yet preposterous.
Oh yeah.
But it turns out to be based on a true story, which I think makes the story even more intriguing. So I was wondering if you would mind kind of setting the stage, giving us a little sneak peek at the
Sure, I
story.
can give you sort of do you want me to give you the how it came to be story? Because that's an interesting one, or just the
Whatever,
plot.
however you'd like to
Okay, well,
go.
I'll give you the how it came to be story because it's kind of weird in and of itself. So when I was growing up, my childhood local illustrator, because sometimes you have some that live in your town, and mine was David Small. And my mom worked in an independent bookstore, and this was in Kalamazoo, Michigan, called the Athena. And so I went to his book release parties there, and it was, he
Cool.
big famous guy. He did Imogene's Antlers, and that was on Reading Rainbow, so you knew he was
Oh, yeah.
somebody. And my mom was at the store one day, and he was there, and he happened to casually mention, "Oh, I live in the old Madame Marantat house." And she was like, "Wait, wait, 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 wait." Because you see, in my family, there was a family story. It was about my grandmother's no good uncle. And this guy, he was no good. He would skip out on his farm chores, the only reason he was there, and he would walk like the 2 miles from Burr Oak, Michigan to Mendon, where this elderly ex-circus performer named Madame Marantat lived, and he would try to figure out how to make his horses do circus tricks, I guess. By going there. So, this had always been a family story. We hadn't put much store by it, but my mom looked into it and she was like, "Holy smokes, there was a Madame Marantat." Not only that, she was like quite the big deal in the day. She, to this day, holds the high jump record on a horse side saddle. She also has the world record to this day of the farthest distance you can be pulled in a little cart with a horse and an ostrich pulling together. All sorts of crazy stuff. So she told me this, and I sort of put it in the back of my mind. And then eventually I was kind of like, "Oh, wait, 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 wait. What if I wrote a story that had something to do with this stuff, but we had David Small illustrate it? He might do it living as he does in her house." So I wrote up a picture book idea. I was like, "This is going to be a picture book. It's going to be like, he did that Bookwoman." I was like, "This will be like that Bookwoman. It'll be like historical, realistic fiction picture book," which I'd never done before, but I figured, why not? This is the perfect opportunity. And I gave it to my agent, and we both promptly forgot about it. And then one day, Book Expo had happened. David Small had been there to promote one of his graphic novels for adults. And someone came back, and they were like, "Oh, I don't know about David Small. He wasn't looking so good." And I was like, "Oh, he's going to die. He's going to die, and he won't have done my book." And I started poking my agent. I was like, "Stephen, Stephen, 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 read the manuscript." He's like, "I don't have it." I was like, "I'll send it to you." And I sent it to him again, and he read it, and he's like, "This is pretty good." And he was more inclined to do it because now he knew David Small's agent because they had worked together with a different client on a different book. So, we sent it off to David. David was like, "Well, come see the house." And So I, you know, he's not far from my mom. So I went and I saw the house and I got the tour from him and his wife, Sarah Stewart. And then we went to a local historian who just 2 years before had done an entire exhibit on Madame Marantat. She literally hands me a packet of all the information. Like, if you want info on Madame Marantat's grandparents and their heritage, I've got that info. I've got the whole thing. And she just gave it to me for free. I was like, thank you, Holly Stevenson, thank you. And then, you know, while we're talking, David's like, yeah, but I don't see it as a picture book. I see this as a novel. Now, I'd never written a novel. And I was like, okay, so what? And he was like, I think you can do it. I believe you can do it. I'm like, why would you believe I can do this? But okay. And yeah, so it became a novel. And that is the novel that is coming out right now.
What an amazing story.
It is kooky. It is very kooky.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love how you kept going after it.
Well, and all the little pieces just kind of fell into place, which was lucky. You know, it could easily have been that there was nothing in the historical society about Madame, or they'd had it, but it was all in different places. I would have had to sit down, make multiple trips to Michigan from Illinois to do the research, to try to find the stuff. No, it was all literally handed to me in like on a silver platter. Like, here you go. All done. I was like, thank you. But then I had to actually write the story.
Yes.
That was a little different.
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. But it went so smooth. It was so easy. It was easy to do in some ways. So these characters were easy to come up with.
Tell me more. I love Susie. And she's just this super fun, interesting character. She's one of many in a big family. And she's a risk taker, and she's hilarious, and she's determined, and she is philosophical, and she is strategic.
Yes. she is strategic. I like that about her. I like it when a kid is strategic about things. Mm-hmm. My daughter is very strategic. She's 10, so yeah, maybe that's a point that I really enjoy in kids. Yeah, it was funny. So I made it easy on myself. This is because this began with my grandmother's no good uncle. I was like, well, let's just pull in the family history then. And so this is loosely based on my grandmother's family at the time living in Burr Oak, Michigan. Now I should say, you know, some characters have been combined and others have been made up and then, you know, but the family stories, man, I was a cannibal. I just ate up every family story and just plugged them into the book. When my relatives read this, they're just going to be shocked. They'll be like, oh my gosh, I was ripping off my husband's family stories. I was like, can I use the one about Odie and the toe? And he was like, really? You want to take the Uncle Odie and the toe thing? I'm like, heck yeah. How many times do you have a story from a family about Odie and an axe and a toe? It's good. So that's in there too. Susie herself is not based on my grandmother. She would have been based on my grandmother's older sister. In real life, the older sister did not go off and join the circus on an ostrich. She went off to Detroit and became a hairstylist, which was an adventure for someone from a very small town in and of itself. My grandmother's name was Dorothy. I have a Dottie in this book as the little sister. My great-great-grandmother Mariah is Granny in this book. And she's just straight up, that's just her. From every story I've heard, that's just her in this book. But yeah, it was a shock. Again, they say write what you know, and what I know are my family stories. And yeah, it made it so much easier to write the book, because I had sort of a sense, and you know, it felt more real to me, I think, than some things that I've tried to write in the past. Yeah.
Well, it really comes across. It feels authentic. And I mean, just you mentioning Granny and the line about, if she looked at you, you couldn't stare her down. She would make your blood run backwards.
Yes, I think that was it. Like run backwards in your veins. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love it. So yeah. Such a great characterization.
Oh yeah, and then that story of her, you know, cutting herself while she's peeling apples, uh-huh. and then she's just not paying attention, and it's just blood is going everywhere, and uh-huh. her daughter-in-law is like, yo, mother, you need to get a Band-Aid. You're going to bleed to death. And the old woman being like, I ain't got enough blood to bleed to death. You know, that's a family story that comes up periodically in my family. I ain't got enough blood to bleed to death. Yeah.
I did want to ask you about that quote specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there were a lot of things that I was like, I feel like there's more behind this that, like, I don't quite get. And so, like, is that a saying that you use for other situations?
Or sometimes, like, it's, like, yeah, it's so funny. Or? We use a lot of family sayings. I'm a little sad. The family saying we literally say the most. And this is why I always say, be really careful what you do in life. Because if there is an embarrassing story about you and you're, like, five, that's all you're going to be remembered for. So my great-great-great-grandfather... which would be the mom in this book's dad, I guess? No. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, dad. He was Norwegian. He was a baker. He moved to Oklahoma. He one day was taking the cookies out of the oven, and his son, who was like, you know, 5 or 6, not a stupid kid, but just watched him take them out of the oven, you know, put them on the sheet, you know, to cool off. Reaches up, grabs a cookie, stuffs it in his mouth, and screams because it's so hot. And then the kid with tears in his eyes and betrayal in his voice says, you didn't tell me it was hot. And so the phrase, you didn't tell me it was hot, is a very common phrase in my family. Mm-hmm. So there are certain choice words. Though I must say, there is a sentence in my dedication that didn't make it into the book for the sole reason that I heard it too late. I had heard it before, mm-hmm. but we, you know, the final edits were in, the book mm-hmm. was turned in, that was it, book's mm-hmm. done. And I went out to dinner with my mom and her sister and my dad in Kalamazoo, and we were having a good time. And then just casually, you know, we're talking about family history, and then my aunt, I think, says, oh yeah, well, there's that family phrase that that Joe being my great-grandfather, used to say. It was a... Our rags may flap us to death, but we will not starve. And this was like during the Depression, where he, you know, they were working on a farm and there was not a lot there. But our rags may flap us to death, but we will not starve. And I was like, doggone it! That's a good line! Why did you not tell me this line before? I could have worked that in somewhere, but nope. So I made it the dedication to both my aunt and my mother. Yeah, it was my only way of getting it in the book. Yeah.
Well... I can see a sequel. I can see spinoffs.
Oh, well, there is. So I am writing a book right now, and hopefully I'm going to try to sell it. It's not exactly a sequel, but to my infinite surprise, one of the characters from this book pops up in it. And I did not expect that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like maybe what? Let's do the math on this. 60 years later. 60 years later. Yeah, one of the characters in this book pops up again. When they popped up, it was as much a surprise to me as anyone. And I was like, oh, apparently this is a companion book now. Okay, I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, so that was kind of fun.
That's intriguing.
Let's hope it sells, because it'll be a lot of fun if it does. Yeah.
Well, if it's half as fun as this one, I have no doubt.
It'll be like this one, but in the 80s. Historical fiction then, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we always get these, you know, you always see like the Richard Peck or the Robert Newton Peck or all those Pecks. Those sort of idealized, oh, my youth, to be young in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. Why is no one young in the 80s? Doggone it. So this is my young in the 80s book. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear more. Speaking of kind of writing about different time periods, what was it like writing about 100 years ago?
Well, it was a little frustrating because the number one thing I wanted to say, and I had to stop myself from saying over and over and over, was, so in this book, Susie sort of bonds in a roundabout way with an ostrich, bad-tempered ostrich named Gaucho, based on Madame Morantad's actual ostrich, Gaucho, who was a mean, nasty sucker. And the thing I wanted her to say was how much he was like a dinosaur. Because mm-hmm. they are. Of mm-hmm. all the birds alive mm-hmm. today, the ones where you really don't have to work that hard to see what they were like as dinosaurs mm-hmm. are ostriches. They mm-hmm. are weird suckers. And of course, At the time when this book takes place, you know, early 20th century, nobody was making the connection between dinosaurs and birds. And I wasn't about to, like, hop on in with my modern day sensibilities. Now, we had some killer copy editors on this thing. And I would use phrases that I thought were ancient. They'd be like, actually, this phrase did not come into the lexicon until 1952. We cannot have her save. I'm like, maybe she invented it. Like, no. We will not be doing that. So they let me get away with some things, but other things, they were like, come on now. Come on. I would have to scale it back. And that happened more than once. You know, I certainly had to get into the mindset of the smells of the time. It's, I mean, it's country. At one point, I wanted her to reference a book, and I was like, well, thank God. The Wizard of Oz was a hit. It was a hit as a book, and then it was a hit as a stage play. Now, obviously, this takes place before the movie came out, but it was a legitimate hit that she would have heard of at the time. So, yeah, things like that, you know, you just don't want to throw in a bunch of modernizations by accident, because then your copy editors slap your wrist.
I did keep thinking about the dinosaur angle as I was reading it.
Man, I wanted to say it so bad. Yeah, you can feel me wanting to say
you
it.
Did it that, like, there was something in the back matter that you mentioned.
Yeah, I got to find in the back matter, I get to say, like, ostriches are like dinosaurs! It's like my last. But no, there's a whole section in there on ostrich facts. And that is not one of them. That is not an ostrich fact you will hear.
And what dinosaur do you feel like Gaucho would most represent?
Well, I can't say Velociraptor because it turns out Velociraptors are little teeny tiny chicken-sized dinosaurs. So that's disappointing. And I can't say T-Rex necessarily because, you know, yeah, he doesn't have much in the way of front claws or anything, but it's not really his movement either. I mean, it would be one of those, like, herd-like dinosaurs that travel in packs and things like that. I'm sure if I knew my dinos better, I could pull one out like this. An Apatosaurus! Something like that. But I don't actually know which one. But I, you know, maybe in spirit, a Velociraptor. I'll say that. Yes. Maybe not in size. The size of Velociraptors dreamed of being, but no.
I had similar... Okay, so I was kind of wondering if Susie was at all based on, you know, whether she was like an autobiographical type of character, but you said she was more like the aunt, your grandma's sister.
Yeah, she was my grandma's sister to a certain extent. There is a bit of me in there, too. I mean, I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is not a small town, but when you grow up anywhere, you're like, man, this town is tiny. I gotta get out of here. So when I went for college, I went real far. I went to Indiana. Woo! From Michigan to southern Indiana. I couldn't get far enough away. And yeah, that was my big breakaway. But since then, I've lived in, you know, I lived in Portland, Oregon, and I lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I lived in Manhattan, and then I've lived here. So I've lived in a whole bunch of, I lived in London at one point. So yeah, there was a bit of the wanderlust. And I did give that to her because I had a bit of that. Maybe not at her age. At her age, I was convinced that I was going to stay in Kalamazoo for the rest of my life, or a small town near Kalamazoo and know everyone there. For some reason, that was a very distinct fantasy of mine. So Baroque actually was sort of my fantasy town because that's where all my ancestors had come from. So
yeah,
it was funny.
That's cool. And that reminds me of that piece in the book where she's kind of being philosophical and talking about, like, is my mind changing? Am I a different person because I know all these people? I think she's imagining being out in the world and meeting mm-hmm. all these different people and being changed. But I liked that.
Yeah, and I think that is something I myself have wondered. Like, the more people you meet, the more they influence your brain, the more they change you that is you. What part of you doesn't change? Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's something that I've often thought about.
I mean, it's deep stuff.
Sure.
But
kids think deep stuff. Oh, I always say that, you know, kids, people never give kids enough credit. Kids think, like, big, deep stuff, and then adults are always shocked by it. But it's like, come on, man. They're just people. People have thoughts. That's what people do.
Yes, but I liked that. I liked that you brought that in, because mm-hmm. I feel like you don't always see that in this kind of story.
Yeah, it was funny. This story, turning it from a picture book into a novel was, you know, I've always said that I'm not an award-winning author. It's not the kind of writing I do, but at the same time, if you're writing a novel, you have to have character development. You have to have, you know, just this person has to have some sort of interior life in some way. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky. It's so tricky to do and not feel cloying or too adult. I think there would be some people who would argue I don't always succeed in not sounding like an adult looking back. Like, it's done in Susie's voice, but it seems to be, like, in retrospect, perhaps when she's an adult looking back at this time, which I didn't really intend, but I guess some people see it that way, which is fine. I'm like, okay, that's sure. Okay. You know, she doesn't die. So great. Okay. Right.
I thought she did well as a kid character. And I
Oh, good. Thank you. I mean, that's nice. That's nice of you to say.
And I thought you, like, peppered in some really fun things that, like, you honed in on some things that, like, a kid would remember, like, that when she's earning her first nickel.
Yeah.
By, like, you know, helping
Granny swipes it. Yeah.
But I remember the first time I earned a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first time you earned a nickel?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I think, well, it was really just allowance, like earning money. That's a good question, because we always, usually if we earned money, we didn't mean to at the time. Like I mentioned, my mom worked in an independent bookstore. Mm-hmm. I helped out there a lot. Occasionally the owner would then pay me mm-hmm. unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. They did not need to. So yes, I think that would be the equivalent of my first nickel that I actually earned. Yeah.
That's fitting.
I think so.
That is lovely and wonderful. Okay, so we've talked about Susie a little bit. Just love her. Can we talk about Madame Marantette?
Sure, yeah. And I should explain, from that part of Michigan, her name should be pronounced, and we had to double check and triple check and quadruple check this. Marantette is Marantette, but I say Marantette, which mm-hmm. is a very southern Michigan mm-hmm. pronunciation. In fact, David Small was saying to me, you know, it's you know, Marantette should be how it's pronounced, but the people of Mendon call it Marantette. And I'm like, darn it, so do I. that's how in my family we were just pronounced your name was Marantette mm-hmm. because, you know. So it's a French, I mean, it should be mm-hmm. Marantette, obviously, mm-hmm. but that is not the pronunciation. So when they were doing the audiobook, mm-hmm. we had to really figure out the correct saying of it. Mm-hmm. Technically, they should have said it like my way, but it's fine.
yeah, well, she's a character.
Boy, she was. I am, I'm looking to buy one of the, you can still buy one of her old circus posters online, because they, apparently in the 60s they made like tons of copies of 5 distinct posters, and hers was one of them.
Oh, wow.
So you can buy a Madame Marantette when she was very young, her on her horse jumping something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she was a fascinating individual. I have, you know, tons of information of her. I have a couple direct quotes from different newspaper articles, some of which I worked into the book.
Oh, wow.
So there are some direct lines from her. But yeah, and I actually talked to the historian quite a bit just to figure out what would she have thought of this? You know, what was her opinion of that? You know, and the whole sign saddle thing. And the historian told me, you know, Holly Stevenson, she said, no, she was the only time you really heard her be very adamant about something was when it came to side saddle.
Huh.
Women should always ride side saddle. That was it. I mean, it was just unseemly otherwise. And so that was that, man. And so mm-hmm. I had to put that in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, finding the core of her personality wasn't that hard. It did help. But, you know, the central mystery of her life is the one that I put in the book, which is, you know, she grew up in the small town. She went off and saw the world. Then, when she got old, came back to the same small town where nobody really liked her because this is a divorced woman who stole this rich family's name because she had gotten married into the Marantats, who are big landowners. And then the marriage was annulled. But she, in the deal that she made, I guess, to annul the marriage, got to keep the name, which is where we got the Marantat. Before that, she was Emma Peak. And she changed that a lot. So, yeah, it was very, very interesting. And so why did she come back? And, you know, David Small will tell you to this day, there are people in that town who say very nasty things about her. Yeah, because, you know, she was not a proper woman. Yes. In spite of the fact that she was side saddle every single moment of her life. Yeah.
Wow. And so you were saying it really didn't take much to pull out that character. Did you... You took her direct quotes and kind of like...
It helps to have direct quotes. Yeah, I read every article that we had on her. You know, we have one photograph of her that doesn't gel with the others, which supposedly shows her quite young, goofing off with her friends. And you do not get many candid photographs mm-hmm. from that time period. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like, you know, 1906 or something like that. But there is a picture of her goofing around with friends. And I couldn't recognize her, but the historian assured me. She's like, no, we are pretty certain that's her. We don't know how the other people are. And it looks like one of the people might also have been in the circus with her.
Hmm.
So that's, I mean, if I ever want to write a Marantat prequel, you know, I got my basis for that. But yeah, no, I don't know. It's for the most part, you know, when you catch somebody in their 70s and their 80s, it's not hard to come up with a personality for them, especially if they've had such an interesting life up to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how you brought in, you kept bringing in that theme of knowing when to let go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will you tell me more about that?
The whole, yeah, so though, you know, like I say, I'm not the most accomplished writer, so I was like, okay, we need a through line. We need
amazing.
I love it. Oh, thank you. Well, we needed a through line of some sort, something to kind of tie the whole thing together, and I was like, well, the thing it could be is if you're going to be sitting on an ostrich, you're going to get bucked off. I mean, I've watched, so, you know, in the movie Swiss Family Robinson, mm-hmm. there is the mm-hmm. scene where they're on different animals, like there's a zebra and there's mm-hmm. an ostrich and all things, and they're riding them mm-hmm. in a course. And watching the poor schmuck, whoever it was who had to ride that ostrich, you're just like, this is not meant for humans on it. They can handle it. They're more muscled than any other bird out there. They don't really, it's just annoying for them. And so they will buck you off any way that they can. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to have a girl on an ostrich on a regular basis, riding this ostrich, yeah, no, I need her to have a really strong grip. And it seemed mm-hmm. to me that a strong grip was a good through line for the book. I was like, strong grip, strong grip, strong grip, strong grip. But of course, what's the flip side of that? Knowing when to let go. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where I kind of came up with that idea. Yeah. And it worked. It's great. It mm-hmm. begins the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it really ends the book, but it's definitely at near the end of the book, mm-hmm. I'd say. So mm-hmm. yeah.
I thought it worked really well. Okay. And so my guess is I know where this is going, but I just had to ask, did you, in the name of research and lived experience, try riding an ostrich?
I did try. I should tell you. There,
you
I did. Well, I didn't. Gosh. I tried in the fact that I tried to find an ostrich to ride, which is difficult in Illinois. So,
and in a pandemic.
And in a pandemic. This was before the pandemic, I want to say. And I got a tip on an ostrich in Wisconsin.
Wait, can you just repeat that?
Oh yeah.
You got a tip on that.
I got a hot tip on an ostrich in Wisconsin. And I have a friend, and she said, I know a guy, and he's got like an animal safari park that includes an ostrich, and maybe you could, you know, try to ride it, or at the very least try to get your photo with it. Guy never got back to me, and I probably should have pursued it, but then we had a pandemic, and the likelihood of me tracking down an ostrich in the middle of a pandemic, while fun on paper, wasn't really going to happen. So I never did get on that ostrich. I'd be willing maybe to do it. One thing I did find, if you ever want to have a fun time, and it's on my website right now, betsybirdbooks.com. On the very first page, if you scroll down, I managed to find photo after photo after photo after photo of uncomfortable Victorian women sitting side saddle on ostriches. Now, I don't know. I'm like, are these ostriches dead? They do not appear to be. They appear to be very well-trained ostriches. And these women are just sitting on them for a posed portrait. You know, it would have been a long exposure, so nobody was supposed to move. And these women, I have them in order of discomfort, from most comfortable to least comfortable sitting. And we're talking like matronly women. We're looking at women who are grandmothers or are mothers, and they've seen life. And they are in their corsets, and they are on a freaking ostrich. And it just amused me so much. There's so many pictures out there. Apparently, it was the thing to do.
Oh, my goodness.
Sit side saddle on an ostrich. So,
did they also have the ostrich feathers in the hats? Like, was this, like...
That's an excellent question. They did not appear... No, they didn't.
The ostrich by, like, hey, I've got your feather here.
Exactly, right? You know, it's weird that, for all that she loved her hats and her big hats, Metamorantet is never featured with ostrich feathers in any of her hats, I don't believe. See, now I have to actually...
I was kind of looking.
Yeah,
at it.
No.
It was, like,
I mean, the most famous photo of her has flowers in her hat. Now, she did own this ostrich farm with a ton of freaking ostriches, and she would give away their eggs to people. She would sign eggs.
Oh.
So, you know, some celebrities sign photos. She signed ostrich eggs.
I hope that's what you're going to be doing at your book
signing. Oh, absolutely. If someone, well, you know, she doesn't have many relatives left, but there is one guy who says that he is descended from her, and he owns one of these signed Morantat ostrich eggs.
Wow.
So they are still around, I'm sure, in very random places. Probably some attics, so probably some museums and the back rooms somewhere in boxes. But yeah, if anyone brings me an ostrich egg, I better have a Sharpie on hand. I can't imagine anything else would, you know, adequately sign an egg.
Maybe a pencil.
Maybe a pencil. You know, pencils are amazing. Unlike pens, they don't fade. I have photos of many of the people in this book from that time period, and all the notes are written on the back in pencil. You can read it just as well today as you could back then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a big pencil proponent. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. This is exciting.
Bring me your ostrich eggs.
Will you settle for chicken eggs?
Oh, sure. If you want me to, I'll just break them, but sure. You know, not on purpose. I'm very clumsy.
Just hard boil them first.
Just hard boil them first.
Yeah.
Yeah, please do. Nobody wants to deal with an ancient egg. Or blow them out. You know, that'd be nice.
Yeah. This is a story for kids, and we're super lucky to have you here at the library, and you do so much for the library, for serving patrons and getting great books into kids' hands, and all the amazing reviews you do. What were you like as a kid?
Oh, shy. Very shy. Very quiet. Didn't like to talk up in class. Still don't. If I'm in some sort of a class, you will not be like, who's going to raise their hand first? It will not be Betsy. Was not very, didn't really put myself out there much. Did some writing on my own. Kind of thought I wanted to be an author. Then eventually figured it wasn't very practical because it didn't come with health insurance. So I decided that was not the way to go. Very quiet kid. Not very adventuresome. Kept to myself, but had a good imagination, I'll say that, to my detriment, because many was the class in which I was just daydreaming and lost half the assignment, which happened on multiple occasions, but I could muddle through to a certain extent. So yeah, dreamy, quiet kid. There you go.
Did you like to read?
I did like to read, thankfully. There wasn't much else to do. It was the 80s. But yes, I did like to read quite a bit. So yeah, I had a wide variety of different books. I got into the Scholastic Book Fair's Apple paperbacks. If it had a ghost in it was a ghost story, I was on it. So, Betty Renright and Willow Davis Roberts, all those people, I read all their ghosty stories they could come up with. Couldn't make enough of them. Dollhouse Murders, The Girl with the Silver Eyes, all that fun stuff. And then, yeah, I read eclectically. I'd read pretty much anything. I read like The Dragon Riders of Pern and Agatha Christie and, just really random stuff. Yeah.
And you said you wrote a little bit?
I did well, no, I wrote a fair amount actually.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I would write, stories and stories and stories, and I wrote one that involved all the kids in my neighborhood, and each one was a character in the book. And that one I actually finished, which was rare. I would write about small towns where I could write about every single character. I made elaborate character maps. I made actual physical maps. Did some fantasy. Yeah. Often had stories where all is one way or another, all the adults in the entire world were dead. My mother didn't care for those, but I was like, but I have to kill them off, otherwise they're around, So yeah, I wrote quite a bit. I still have a little of it left. Not a ton. I don't know where it all ended up. It's probably been thrown out or in my attic or something back in Kalamazoo. But yeah, no, I was a bit of a writer.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's really cool. There are so many ways to tell stories these days, right?
Oh,
Like,
yes.
you've got your podcast. That's one amazing way. You've got books. You've got, I don't know. Now kids today have like Snapchat. They're
Oh,
telling
yeah.
stories through that way. Do you have, like, what's your favorite way to tell stories?
Oh, well, writing books is probably my favorite way. It's funny though, you're absolutely right. My daughter, she's not limited in a lot of the ways that I was. So she's writing a musical on the one hand, based on Scarborough Fair, and then she's writing a different musical that's more like an operetta, which is on the life of Abigail Adams. And then she's got like seven different stories, and then she's making stories with Google Slides and a lot of clip art, which are actually more like comics, and she's actually making comics based on her friends in theater camp. So there are just so many more options for children right now, which is so fascinating when it comes to their storytelling and the kinds of stories that they can do. But for me, yeah, no, I like books. I've got my blogging, so that's most of my writing is the blogging that I do. But then I've got the books that I write, and then I'd love someday to do a graphic novel. That would be my dream. But that takes an entirely different set of muscles to a certain extent to do a good graphic novel. I've seen many a fine author fail miserably to write comics, so it is hard. And I don't have a story in mind for one right now, but someday I might. So I'm keeping myself open to it.
I love that. I have every bit of faith
We will see. We shall see.
in
Yeah.
you. Do you ever get stuck as a writer?
Well, it's funny. Yes, but I don't want to say that if I get stuck on a as a writer that I'm working on the wrong thing, but I took a writing retreat this summer. My husband and I found this Airbnb in like White Pigeon, Michigan, middle of nowhere. And it was this mansion. It was like this like two huge, two-story, like towering over acres of land and of lake and just nowhere, and just beautiful. And we just hunkered down for like, 5 days and just wrote while my kids were at my parents. And it was really interesting because I had two projects I was gonna write on, and the first one I thought was this fantasy, which I keep trying to make, and it just wasn't coming. It was like I would try. I spent a whole day trying, and it just wasn't. And then the other thing, which I thought was just a little fluff thing, I tried that, and it was like water flowing from my fingertips. It was the easiest thing in the world. So, in a way, I've got to really feel the material in some way. I've got to be passionate about it, but then it's also just I've got to connect to it. If I'm not connecting to it, something's wrong. I'm gonna have to completely rework that fantasy to make it work, to make it more like these books, honestly, to make it more something I can identify with personally, because I think I'm pushing myself too far out of what I'm familiar with, and I don't think it's playing well. In fact, I know it's not playing well. I've had a couple people read it and they're like, nah. And I'm like, okay, there's something not quite right here. But at the same token, I have some older projects that I kind of worked on and I kind of left. One of them I think could really, really work. So I think I'll be going back to that. Yeah.
That is very cool. You keep getting back on the ostrich.
Keep riding that ostrich. I'm trying to find a good phrase to write when I sign this book to people. And I'm like, my daughter was like, keep riding that ostrich. I'm like, yeah. Could be like, keep plucking that ostrich. She's like, no. I'm like, okay, I'll figure it out. Yeah.
I love it.
Get up on that ostrich. It's not. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Don't let go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Get a grip. No wait, that's not good. That's horrible. That's terrible. I should not do that. No.
Do you have anything to say to kids who are writing and wanting to tell stories in some way? Do you have any kind of advice or?
Yeah, my advice kind of goes counter to all the advice they tend to get. A lot of people will tell the kids, okay, no matter what happens, no matter where you go in life, keep writing. Whatever you do, keep writing. I would counter that. I wrote until maybe high school and I stopped. And I came back to it because it's something you can come back to. And yes, you should definitely write. Write when it's right for you. And if it's not right for you, then don't write. And then you can always come back. You can always be that writer. If it's not right for you at a certain point in your life, it might be right for you later in your life. And I think people like get this impression like, well, I stopped doing art when I was 10. I can never go back to it. If I'd kept doing it, maybe I'd be good. Like, no, you can take it up again and be great. I mean, there is no rule that says like, you have to keep doing a thing for the rest of your life in order for yourself to be good at it later. I don't think that's true. I know plenty of people, you know, there's plenty of stories of people in their 60s and their 70s, you know, suddenly writing a kid's book and it's an amazing kid's book. And sometimes they win awards. And so, you know, my advice to kids is write. Write is great. And especially, you know, if you're going through something that's harsh or hard or difficult and writing is what helps with that, then by God, write it down. Get it down and put it somewhere safe for yourself for later. But by the same token, if not writing is what helps you, don't write. And then you can always pick it up later.
Wow. So that really brings us back to like, know when to let go. It's okay to let go.
Yeah. Know when to let go. And then if you want to grip it later, you totally can. Mm-hmm. There's no reason not to take a writing class when you're 25 or, you know, to do something later in life. Like, because I think kids definitely get the feeling of like, the thing I decide to do now will be the thing I do for the rest of my life. And it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. The thing you do for the rest of your life may be something that doesn't even exist now. We live in a highly changing world. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it.
Yep. Me too.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for talking to me. I like the talking, as you can tell.
And so. You're good at it.
Thank you.
It's one of your many talents. And I am lucky to be one of your listeners. Any last comments?
Get a grip. No, it's still bad. It's still bad. I can't get away with it. Yeah. No.
Go get your copy of Long Road to the Circus. It's amazing and fun. It works for all ages. It'd be a great read aloud, I think, to younger kids. I think it'd be super fun. Yeah. Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you for having me.